Good morning, everybody. I am, just to introduce myself, I'm Tom Gillesberg. I'm the chairman of the Copenhagen office of the Executive Intelligence Review. And for those that don't know it, this is, you have all gotten our magazine. This is a magazine that was founded in 1974 by the American economists and many time political candidate for the US presidency, Lyndon LaRouche, and which has a quite extraordinary record, I would say, of actually describing the underlying processes ongoing globally, presenting the what many people would say the hidden shadows of what's really going on, and also that has been the key leader in a long-term fight to actually in many different ways reorganize the global financial system and avoid some of the terrible troubles that we're going to discuss today. I'm also the chairman of the Schiller Institute here in Denmark, which is an organization founded by Helga Sepp LaRouche, the wife of Lyndon LaRouche, which is a worldwide campaign, which is very known lately for a massive campaign we conducted for in before the FAO summit in Rome for a doubling of the world food production. And the Schiller Institute has been in many countries, including Denmark, very active in also promoting the kind of infrastructure development programs, economic development programs needed for Denmark, needed internationally. You can say it's been also been functioning as somewhat as a foreign policy think tank around the world of bringing nations together and discuss future plans, but without the normal control that tends to be on these on those matters. I think everybody got a program, and I will begin discussing this dual crisis the world faces right now, which is both a financial blowout crisis, which is also, as most people have noticed, a very severe strategic crisis and a process which many people would have thought we should no longer see, of actually having global strategic confrontation, which could lead, if the process is not reversed, actually to World War III down the line. Yes?
One announcement. In order to promote discussion, we are recording the...
Yes.
And
let's... Yeah. And then we'll have, I think, discussion, then a break. Then Michelle will be presenting the history of the New World Economic Order. We'll have discussion. And then I will... begin a discussion for the last discussion on the Earth's next 50 years. And for our own reasons, I'm actually recording the opening remarks and the speeches, but we will not be recording the general discussion in order for it, and you'd also notice we have not invited any journalists, in order to be able to have a frank discussion on these matters, and people open can present their thoughts and not be hindered by having to assume some persona or some public posturing or whatever for reasons of the media. Now, on Sunday, something quite remarkable happened. At 11 a.m., there was a press conference in Washington where the U.S. Treasury Secretary Paulson came out, and on a Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning, and announced that the U.S. government will take over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two dominant real estate mortgage lenders in the United States, which sits right now with a total of $5.4 trillion, that's $5,400 billion worth of mortgages. Now, the fact that this happened on a Sunday is quite extraordinary. And of course, it happened on a Sunday at 11 o'clock in order for this to be done before the financial market opened on Monday morning in Asia. Because there was already ongoing, actually, a financial meltdown in the end of last week. The announcement of this takeover, which is truly extraordinary, I mean, we've never seen anything like it, actually, before in U.S. history, is not to save the U.S. house owners, as Paulson and others have claimed. As a matter of fact, the U.S. house owners will see nothing of the money that's being pumped in to save Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They will still, if nothing is done, go bankrupt, be thrown out of their homes. You'll still see record high numbers of people being thrown out on the streets, houses that cannot be sold, and so on and so forth. This was done in order to save the banks and the financial system, or all of these financial values in banks and financial system that has been built up with financial bubbles over many, many years. And the construction as it looks right now was very explicitly that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will be taking over the government and will be a sort of paper basket for toxic waste papers from banks and private financial institutions. That is that all of these financial assets, so-called, that many banks and investors hold, which has one value on the books, but if you would go out and try to sell these things, you would get 20% value if you're lucky. Now the idea with this bailout is that all of these unsellable assets will basically be thrown into Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and be exchanged for real money from the U.S. government. So the financial speculators, bank, and so on can be saved, supposedly, by this. Now, as of Friday, the U.S. had an official government debt around $9 trillion, estimated a little more than $9,000 billion. There's a memo circulating in the U.S. Federal Reserve stating that with this plan of action, with the saving of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and with the U.S. basically taking over all of these bad assets, then by 2010, the U.S. will have a public debt of $23 trillion. Now, Lyndon LaRouche, the head of our campaign, which has been in the, we'll see that, been doing in the game for a long time and been the most precise to actually predict what's really going on and where it will go, came out and says, this is simply insane. It won't work, but it will destroy the United States if this is upheld, if this is not reversed. This is totally unconstitutional, because in the U.S., only the U.S. Congress has the power to actually create money, which include that increasing the U.S. debt. This is, LaRouche stated, tantamount to treason. This is a totally treasonous act against the United States. And 6 weeks ago, many of you will know that the background for this was that 6 weeks ago, Paulson got through Congress a plan of action that something should be done for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And first it was a kind of government backing guarantee of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. When this was created, Paulson said to key members of Congress, now, in order for this to function, in order for the markets to believe this, we have to have it as an open-ended guarantee. No ceiling. But of course, we'll never use that. This is only for the markets. 6 weeks later, with simply the whole thing was taken over, and this open-ended guarantee is simply put on the US government. Right now, we are printing in the United States 100,000 copies of a documentation which will be circulating around the United States, of course, much in Washington, but also all over the United States, called Tantamount to Treason on this whole thing. How it was done, who it will benefit, what should be done instead, and basically stating the fact this has to be reversed, repealed. If it is not, it's going to blow out the US dollar, it's going to blow out the US economy. And as everybody knows, if the US dollar goes, so goes the world financial system. Since it's all based on the US dollar, it's the US dollar which is the reserve currency, China, Korea, Japan, everybody else is sitting with this huge amount of investments in the United States and U.S. Treasury bonds and, of course, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac mortgages and so on. And if this goes, it simply throws everything into chaos. Now, the good news is that there is a way out of this and that this is not, it was not unpredicted. And it is not unsolvable. Michel, we will show a clipping here. It's from a webcast held July 25th last year. A webcast by Mr. LaRouche in Washington. And what we will see is actually a small commercial we later made out of it. But it's on this webcast. Michel?
There is no possibility of a non-collapse of the present financial system. None. It is now. The present financial system cannot continue to exist under any circumstances, under any presidency, under any leadership, or any leadership.
Nationwide, millions of homeowners being foreclosed on.
Should I be worried about Bear Stearns and Circle of Queen and get my money out there? No, no, no. Bear Stearns is fine.
The time has come to make some history, to make a turning point in history, because there is no alternative.
We can then move on to the process of rebuilding. LaRouche has called for the establishment through legislation of the credit system. Increased interest rates, increased cost of borrowing for people who want to engage in speculation.
So therefore, we're going to work back to the American system. We're going back to an image of the United States that we have been governed by the world of the 26th. We're a nation that is committed to the welfare of all people.
To establish the new international monetary models on the fixed exchange rate structure established by Franklin Roosevelt with the original Bretton-Woods Conference
for the presidential campaign issue of politics on the provide be able to be true in this time of crisis when most of us want to do it. That and nothing else qualifies one for
Well, I don't know if you could heard it, but basically what LaRouche laid out 14 months ago was that we are standing in front of an immediate implosion of the global financial system. It's coming, it cannot be prevented, and we have to discuss how do we deal with it, how do we get out alive. And what you also saw at this commercial was you saw all of these people standing up in different congresses around the United States, presenting a Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, I'll get back to that, a solution to how do we deal with this, which became a heavily discussed point around the United States on grassroots levels. And also some of leading political circles in the United States, especially Hillary Clinton, actually picked up on many parts of this that action needed to be taken to save the people that's being foreclosed on, that's being thrown out on the streets. We have to deal with a real physical economic crisis here. And as you probably know, Hillary Clinton, which should by now have been the leading presidential candidate in the United States, and which should have been the candidate where everybody could have a sigh of relief and saying, after these 7 years with this idiot George Bush and with this vicious madman Dick Cheney running around upsetting the whole planet, finally we can get a real American president again, something that we can collaborate with, something that can create global order. And as you probably also noticed, that did not happen, that there was a very intense campaign inside the United States to get rid of Hillary Clinton as a Democratic presidential candidate. Not a campaign from downstairs, but run top-down, especially as the words of George Soros and other people that take their orders from London, going in with money, and George Soros was key in buying up the Democratic Party in the United States, and make sure that Barack Obama, not Hillary Clinton, became the Democratic candidate. And as most of you probably have noticed, Barack Obama is nothing but packaging. There is absolutely no content, no policies, it's an artificial creation. And as we probably will see over the next weeks here, it's already ongoing, we'll probably see the collapse of Barack Obama's campaign to nothing. Already after the Republican convention, we've seen that suddenly all of these opinion polls, which they have a lot of in the United States, they live by them and feed on them, totally changed, and basically the Obama campaign is disintegrating. And it seems to be then that McCain is left standing in this whole mess. And that is also quite a problem, because McCain is not much more substantial in terms of an idea of how to deal with this crisis. It's in some ways very similar to the case of George Bush, who didn't really know what he was doing himself, but then had controllers who all the time would run around tell him what to do. And the controllers of John McCain at this time do not seem to be exactly the crowd of people we would have chosen. Nonetheless, that seems to be the circumstances we have to deal with some way or another. And therefore, we will not sit on the sides, but we have to very active get into the picture with solutions to this. Now, LaRouche gave this webcast on the 25th of July last year. Just 3 days later, you had the collapse of the IKB bank in Germany, and we began this whole series of collapses of banks that went bankrupt in what came to be known as the subprime crisis. that this was all the bad housing loans in the United States that had been resold and resold and resold around the world. Now the banks had to write all this stuff off, and a lot of them went bust. Now, that was never simply a crisis of the subprime system. That was, in reality, really a blowout of the global financial system and banking system. That yes, there was a problem with overblown housing values. And not only in the United States, we have plenty of it in Denmark, they have it in Britain, they have it in Spain. Most countries, as a matter of fact, have this. And all of this housing bubble was used to take out debts and run up debts and so on and so forth. But that's simply one corner of it. All assets that were involved, so to speak, had been run up in values. And we have a credit card bubble, we have a stock market bubble, we have, I mean, you can simply pick them out, and some of our banking friends can simply line up one after the other bubble that is ready to pop. And where you had a situation where the banks, financial institutions, investors, and so on and so forth, simply has a lot of stuff on the books, assets, that simply do not have the value in real life that they have on the book. And therefore, this whole thing has to go. And that's the background for the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac bailout. Now, the problem is trying to solve the problem by taking all of these debts and simply put it over on the government. And we had a little thing of it here in Denmark, Roskilde Bank, a small regional bank, 37 billion crowns in balance. It's not a big thing. It went bust, just like with Northern Rock in England. The Danish government says, oh, we can't have a Danish bank go down. It will give a bad reputation for the Danish banks. We have to salvage this. We gave out a national guarantee, and we'll sell it to somebody. Some weeks, a month, but it went by. You couldn't sell it to anybody. And just last week, the government then pushed through the parliament that the Danish state will give a 20 billion crown guarantee to the national bank in order for the national bank to take over this regional bank. 20 billion crowns, it's about $4 billion. This is a small regional bank. We have a lot of other banks in Denmark, and there's a long list in the national bank right now of banks that are in trouble. Most countries have a long list of banks that are about to go into trouble. Now, what happened with Fannie Mae is simply orders of magnitude greater. This is a totally different dimension. Can it work? I mean, all the experts were out right after it happened and said this was the only thing to do. This was a good thing. We are happy that the U.S. government is stepping in with money for us. But even though you had a stock rally on Monday, it didn't go any further than Tuesday, where you already had crisis in the markets again, and where Lehman Brothers, the next financial institution, dropped 45% in one day. That's pretty good. And basically, the whole crisis is back. And what we'll see is that it's not only Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, as I said, this is everything else that will then have to be bailed out. Now, LaRouche has for a long time warned about this. Through many years, he has been trying to describe the change in U.S. financial policy and in global financial policy through this pedagogical device called the triple curve. And you'll see here, there's basically three curves. The bottom one is called physical economic input-output, and it's going downwards. Then the second curve is called monetary aggregates, and it's been growing. Then on top, there's a curve called financial aggregates that's been growing a lot more. Now, the U.S. economy, most Western European economies, many other economies also in South in America and other places has been going through this process. On the one side, Japan, of course, too, that you had The physical, physical economy, that is industrial production, farming, also things like hospitals, schools, water systems, infrastructure, that part of the economy has actually been shrinking for quite some time. As a matter of fact, the financial world, which is the line above, has been growing. And it's been growing to a large extent by looting the physical economy of the nations. But by doing so, the financial sector has grown and had a very fine life, created a lot of billionaires. That's the top one, the financial aggregates, and the middle one, the money supply, has also been growing, while the physical economic backing, for instance, of the U.S. dollar, has been diminishing. The amount of money the U.S. Federal Reserve has been put into circulation has been growing year after year after year after year. Despite the growth of money, the number two curve, the financial aggregates, the financial sector has been growing even more. They created money of their own, you could say. They took financial assets and through selling them around the market, they grew in value, grew in value, grew in value. Now, then we reach a certain point when the financial aggregates, the one on top, simply cannot be sustained. They have no more credibility. People are saying this is going to pop. Now, what do you do then? Well, what you don't do is what is happening right now. The next slide. Which is, this is a different thing. You can see the two top lines are crossing. That is, that in order to save the financial bubble that has been pumped up, the government then will start to print money like crazy to bail out the financial bubble. And the rate of increase of the money supply actually then accelerates and overtakes the financial aggregates. Seemingly the problem is solved. Now, anybody that is thinking a little bit ahead will know what then will happen. The next slide. This is the hyperinflation in Weimar Germany, 1923, where from in the beginning of the year having a relative stable currency in the Reichsmark, by the end of the year you had trillion mark stamps, you needed a wheelbarrow to go and buy a loaf of bread. Everything simply, the currency became worthless. Through a process of the government basically saying, at that time, we have to pay the money to France from the leftover debt of World War I, the reparations. If we don't pay it, they're going to invade us. We don't want to be invaded. We have absolutely no money. What do? We print the money. And for a little while, it went fine. And suddenly, this happened. This is what we, if this process is not aborted and changed, this is what we see with the dollar, what we see with the global system right now. And then, of course, one could say, it's all just money. And I'm not fixated on money as such, paper money, what's that? But the point is, through this process, this actually had devastating economic, political effects around the world. I mean, for one thing, already in the takeoff of this process, it means that money is moved into speculation in oil, in food stocks, in strategic raw materials, and that do have an effect. We don't know how many millions of people have died because of this food crisis we've seen globally over the last year, but it's a lot. And we'll simply see disintegration of many national economies if this is not changed. Now, that's the one side of the matter. But as most of you know through your experience in history, financial crises never tend to simply come alone. They normally automatically lead into also strategic crises globally. And not so long ago, we saw this suddenly while the whole world was sitting around watching the Olympics being opened. You know, traditionally a time when you all sit around where you, you know, drop the wars and you get together without war for some time. We saw this Georgian attack on South Ossetia, which really was just the latest development in a whole process of, you can say, global strategic tension that has been blowing up. For quite some time, we've been documented why, how London has actually been sitting and pushing buttons right and left and tried to start strategic conflicts and political destabilizations anywhere they could. In Africa, countries like Kenya, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Sudan, in we say it in attempts to destabilize Iran, get a conflict. Some, like Dick Cheney, would like a war with Iran. We've seen it also in South America, other places. We've seen it in Pakistan with the murder of Benazir Bhutto and with a continuing strategic destabilization that's been ongoing. Now, these things happen for a reason. War don't just start. Sometimes it starts by mistake. If you have major powers like the United States and Russia sitting in the Black Sea with all their carriers and this and that, you could actually have war by mistake, and you should watch out not to have it. But when it comes to the attack on South Ossetia from Georgia, this was, as for all that we can see, done by the orders of Dick Cheney, not Bush, but Dick Cheney, as part of London's plan of destabilization, and most specifically also in Georgia, through the powerful control that George Soros has over the government of Georgia. It's a totally creation by George Soros. We put lots of documentation on it, and many others have too, how the whole Rose Revolution was financed by George Soros, and Mark Mallock Brown, we have to call him Lord Mallock Brown these days, from as a minister right now of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office in London, and who for a long time has been the controller of George Soros, and who has been very much involved directly with George Soros. He's also right now in the Quantum Funds. He's been also, when he functioned as in the United Nations, been actively involved in creating these destabilizations. Of course, luckily we had a very alert response, I would say, from Russia on this question, putting its foot down and saying, enough is enough, stop. We're going to stop this process. We're going to defend our national sovereignty. We have Russian citizens in South Ossetia. We're going to stand up and defend them, and we're going to show to the world that now this process is stopping. Russia will continue to commit itself to be a sovereign nation, and we will collaborate with other sovereign nations, and we are not going to fold up and simply self-destruct. The British, of course, with their puppets, and I must say, unfortunately, the Danish government is definitely one of them. That's why we went to Iraq. That's why the Danish government immediately jumped out and says, oh, yes, 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 bad Russia, poor little Georgia. We forget about that Georgia was provoking this whole thing. We're going for a confrontation with Russia. Now, luckily, old Europe, like Germany and France and Italy, has been saying, no, we are not going to take this confrontation. We need a sound collaboration with Russia in the future. We will not go along with this. But there's an extreme pressure on all points, also with media, with the whole thing, for this British policy of saying, now we need confrontation. We have to go with this. And it's, again, all governments of the world really has to be alert and look at how the British are playing them. How, just like the Venetians in former time would be experts and always hiding behind the mask, and then never showing your true face, always doing things behind the back, always backing up all sides, and at the critical point, standing behind people and giving the knife, throwing the knife in the back of people when they are no longer usable for these machinations of British foreign policy. And unfortunately, with this terrible strategic failure of the United States, especially through the work of Dick Cheney over the many last year, has been doing the work of the British in all of these different conflicts. Now, while everybody is looking right now on Georgia and the fact that Dick Cheney was just there and NATO and so on, LaRouche has actually warned that don't miss what's going on for the obvious. Sure, there's the crisis in Georgia, but look at what's going on in Pakistan right now. Pakistan is being totally destabilized through especially a lot of the British control through Saudi Arabia with Saudi Arabian money. There was this massive campaign to throw out Musharraf. And by throwing out Musharraf, the political stability of Pakistan was also thrown out the window. And this is an extremely dangerous situation. And it doesn't really help them in the manner that also, of course, Pakistan do have nuclear weapons. So if people have, so to speak, have nightmares about Afghanistan, think about what Pakistan can turn into if this thing does not get under control, if Pakistan do not have is not stabilized and through also economic development and so on, and there's things get under control. So basically what we are standing with is this dual, very, very dramatic strategic crisis, with the financial crisis, with the global strategic confrontation, basically on an autopilot, if nothing is done, if this confrontation policy is not stopped, to World War III. A confrontation between the world order, so to speak, of Britain and the United States, if U.S. is falling in behind Britain on this. And then the countries which will not give up their sovereignty of Russia, China, India, other countries, but especially Russia, especially China. And then we'll have a terrible global destruction of both the financial system and this, which could, if nothing is done within very short time, actually lead to a dramatic reduction of the world's population, that simply the economies dissolving will no longer carry the people living there, and will have what really amounts truly to a nightmare. Now, the good news is this can all be changed. These are catastrophes which are of the making of human stupidity, but they can also be changed by the making of human action. LaRouche already for a long time ago and explicitly on the webcast last year laid out direct policies which can actually change this. Beginning with right after this webcast, he laid out something called the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, which is a law proposal, which was discussed in many parts around the United States, of simply going in and saying no more foreclosures. Nobody will be thrown out of their home. We simply stop that process. People that are sitting in a home they can no longer afford because the price is going up will keep paying what they can pay, what they have been paying, into an account. But they will be allowed to stay in their house to not make things worse. Now that, of course, will mean that all of the banks that has already accounted for and booked in the future payments on all of these loans get into trouble. And they are already into trouble with the whole thing, with all of these assets collapsing. Therefore, you will also have a second part of it saying, no, but banks have to be saved. It's the national chartered banks, the state chartered banks, the banks people use for normal day-to-day transactions. They have to be there, they have to function, else the economy simply cannot function. Therefore, we, in orderly manner, let the banks go bankrupt, but we reorganize the banks through a bankruptcy reorganization, where the day-to-day transaction of the bank will go on, but where all the other kinds of bad assets, bad debt of the banks will be frozen for the time until we are able to deal with it at a later point. Point number two came not long after, when the whole dollar became under heavy attack. As you probably all remember, the dollar suddenly began to fall very heavily. And where the U.S. Federal Reserve, as a response to the crisis, lowered the U.S. interest rates dramatically. And of course, by lowering the interest rates, also began a stampede of money out of the United States. And the rules came out and says, you cannot do this. You will blow out the dollar. Therefore, you have a double thing to do. On the one side, you have to have a high U.S. interest rate, at least 4%, which is also what it is right now in the European system, to keep a strong, to support the dollars. So for all normal financial speculative interest rate money going out, keep the interest rate on 4%. But at the same time, for internal rebuilding of the U.S. economy, you have another interest rate for specific things like investments into farming, infrastructure projects, also reorganizing of parts of the whole housing market and so on. You have a preferential interest rate of 1, max 2% for that kind of stuff, but only internally in the U.S. economy, in the internal U.S. economy. Point number three, the U.S. has to make a partner agreement with Russia, China, and India, a so-called four powers agreement to reorganize world affairs. That the U.S. steps away from the idea of trying to destroy nation states in the name of globalization, and instead says, no, we want sovereignty. Other nations should have sovereignty too. If these four nations go together, we can actually, we have the clout to reorganize world affairs. Both, of course, on the strategic questions, make sure we don't get into stupid wars here. But secondly, through a reorganization of the global, the world financial system, a so-called New Bretton Woods, like was done in 1946 after World War II, on the initiative of Franklin D. Roosevelt, you set up a global financial system to take care of the development of the world. A system which has to ensure that the physical economic development of the world happens. Now, some people here will say, but what about Europe?
And Japan, the second world economy.
Huh?
And Japan, the second world economy.
And Japan and others. Why are they left out? And they're not left out. The idea is that these four nations can initiate such an agreement. Then everybody else will be invited to join and will join. Because if these four do something, then everybody else will join. The point is, Europe is not going to do anything of this kind on its own. There was a chance in 1989, and I think Michel will show, we had great visions and ideas of the role Western Europe especially could play in building up the world after 1989. Unfortunately, it did not happen. In Europe, you had Maastricht. In Europe, you then had a process leading into the Lisbon Agreement. You had a process where of doing away with national sovereignty and basically saying, no, we have to have one big empire in Europe, which then can play a part in globalization. And what most people have not truly reflected on, and I know this is for sure the case in the Danish ministries and in the Danish government, is the fact that globalization primarily is not primarily an economic thing as an isolated thing. Primarily, globalization has been a process of destroying national sovereignty, of taking the different nations and getting them to agree to do away with all kinds of laws, all kinds of powers that define them as a nation state and give them power to actually do something on their own in their nations. And instead replace that by a world of empires. You can say a modern day British Empire, because what was the British Empire? That was in reality a military political apparatus to back up multinational private empires like the British East India Company, which was the ones really running the colonies of the British Empire. And through the British Empire policy of free trade, giving these private financial interests of London the leverage to actually go out and loot the rest of the world, like we have seen with the process of globalization today. In opposition to this, what we are speaking about is therefore a new Bretton Woods, a new financial system where we will have to write off a lot of the old debt, like has happened before, especially around wars. I mean, you know, you have debt, it cannot be paid, you have to write it off. That we can survive. The important thing is there's a system to take over that will function. And a system which will have to be based, again, like the Bretton Woods system, on fixed exchange rates. It will be based on the principle that we shut down speculators. Speculation is not a legitimate business. We will prioritize certain things, like a massive expansion of global food production to stop this terrible food crisis we have. We'll prioritize physical production. We'll go in with massive program to develop raw materials extraction around the world to make sure that all nations can actually have the raw materials they need at a fair price. Projects like the next one here, the global Eurasian land bridge, of massive infrastructure corridors, which we'll get back to later, railroads, magnetic levitated railroads that go 400-500 kilometers an hour, a transportation grid to actually connect the different economies of the world, not just to the rest of the world through harbors going out, shipping out goods, but also internally through massive infrastructure investments. And basically, with the idea which came out after a dreadful time in European history in 1648 after the 30 Years' War, when Europe was totally exhausted, when Europe had basically been bleeding to death through war for not just the 30 years, actually a process of over 100 years, and where there was, through the Treaty of Westphalia, was made this agreement, we'll have sovereign nation states, we'll have mutual collaboration, and we'll have as a standing policy of our nation the benefit of the other. It's to my advantage that my neighbor is profiting and developing. That way we'll both have peace. We have already seen some policy circles, also, of course, many privates discussing these things, and that has to increase by leaps and bounds. Some also publicly beginning to take it up, like Tremonti, the finance minister in Italy, which open and publicly has been calling for a new Bretton Woods, and actually stated that when Italy takes over the presidency of the European Union at New Year's, this will be on the agenda. When he is having he will call a conference and discuss these things. In France, you have people, socialists like Michel Rocard, François Hollande, the head of the Socialist Party, coming out saying, we need to discuss a new Bretton Woods. You had other things, like you might have heard, Poul Nyrup Rasmussen here from Denmark led a group of 14 former statesmen coming out saying, we have to discuss these global issues. The point is, we're running out of time. And therefore, Helge Sepp-Lerouge has been putting forward this call that we cannot discuss this at a distant point in the future. Already now, when the UN convenes on the 26th of September, the General Assembly convenes, this should be put on the agenda. We have to have nations that are somewhat courageous here, that looks ahead, that puts this on the agenda and says, let's discuss this. It has to be in the public discussion, and of course, much more, it has also right now to be in all private discussions that might be ongoing, because these are questions nobody can run away from. There's not a place on this planet where we can hide from this. So with that, I think that's also why we have invited you to this seminar. That's why we try to have an intense discussion in diplomatic circles, in all other circles, on these issues. And I would like to open up the debate. As I said, I'll stop my recording here, which I recorded, and open it up for discussion and